I get came to very high levels. Like I could ride Grand Prix. I could, but I never felt that I was good enough. And that didn't matter to what I achieved. It was literally this inner, my inner self-doubt that I always chased. And I always had this fear of not being good enough.
My name is Paul Harvey, and this is Life, Passion, and Business. We're about helping you explore, finding your passion for life and the work that you do. But it's so much more than that. It's about finding clues to the big life questions. What does it mean to be successful? What is the meaning of life? If you're looking for more, then join me on this journey, where together we will discover through interviews, tools, and tips how to live life full of meaning, passion, and purpose. Geraldine Schmidt is the founder of The Story Weavers, an online service that connects children from around the world with monthly collaborative writing projects. It's all about nurturing kids' active communication skills. Geraldine says that everything previous to this was preparation for what she's doing now. In her youth, Geraldine's passion was being with horses, and at 17 she began working as a stable apprentice. Although the hours were long, the work was hard, she loved it and found ways to make even the most arduous of tasks a pleasure. Working with horses is hard, but the reward is riding and learning to communicate with these amazing creatures. But when you're young and life offers other attractions. It was a snowboarding accident that took Geraldine out of the saddle for over a year. The gift of this time was that she discovered her passion for communication, and it was possible to work directly with horses using nothing but a lunge rope, her voice, and body language. Following her apprenticeship, Geraldine wanted to develop advanced riding skills, so she moved to Vienna. This was the start of a 10-year process that culminated in the running of a successful stable and riding business. However, no matter what she did, it was never enough. Her self-confidence got in the way and eventually drove her to the point where she decided to give up and switch careers. Now in her 30s, Geraldine moved into the software industry, and those team building and communication skills served her well. But the switch in career did not alleviate the inner conflict and the self-doubt she always felt. The struggle became so severe it was affecting her health, and she was eventually losing her hair. The turning point was a book, The Untethered Soul, which as it happens, happens to be one of my top 20 books that I have found useful over the years. So do check out the book list at the website under the resources tab. Listening to that audiobook helped Geraldine in turning the baseline belief from fear to one of happiness. Now when she faced a challenge, she took the standpoint that I will figure it out, and her confidence grew. Not only did it change her own thinking, that change had a profound effect on her daughter too. Our conversation is her hero's journey. It is the transforming of her fears and discovery of how to apply the best of her skills to make a difference in the world. Out of this journey came The Story Weavers, an online resource for homeschooling families to help children develop leadership and communication skills. The service brings together children from all over the world where they can learn to communicate, work together in groups of 4 to 6, creating story projects. It is Geraldine's mission to give children the confidence to face life's challenges, because she believes that when we have good communication skills, we have the capacity to handle conflict and make it something that builds relationships rather than break them. I hope you enjoy the conversation with Geraldine Schmidt. So I am delighted this morning, as I'm delighted to be speaking to all of my guests, because they take their time to be with me, and I just think that's so precious. So I'm so delighted to be with Geraldine Schmidt. Now, she is an entrepreneur who works with stories and children. That needs some unpacking, doesn't it? So thank you for taking some time to be with me today. Welcome to the program.
It's an honor to being on your podcast. I love listening to them. So once you asked me to be on it, I was like, yes.
So, Geraldine, this is life, passion and business. And it's all about that exploration of the journey that we are on in life. It's all about our life and how we bring all the essence of it together. So where did it start for you? Because I know you're an entrepreneur now, but what was it like? What was the plan? What did you want to be when you got big, when you grew up?
So I was always the freedom loving. So the very first thing, actually, I started working with horses, right? That was my very first endeavor into business. And while I even was in the apprenticeship to becoming to being able to run horse facilities by myself, I loved the communication, how we communicate. And horses were very honest and authentic in that by, you know, going over the body language and really telling us up to the very energetic level that they see through you, right? I mainly worked with stallions back then, and they're like, in 2 seconds, they decide if they're going to let you lead and how you're going to react to your body and what you're thinking. And that was my endeavor throughout all of the years, throughout the different industries I've worked with, from horses and then going over to software development and now working with children. It's always this red thread of how do we communicate in a way with, you know, our body language, but also with our tonality and everything that we do. And how can we now take all of this wisdom and make it easier for our children? And that's where I ended up with. And that's really, this is now the business where I think everything previous was the preparation for what I'm doing now.
Okay, that's the short version. So what was the actual story? Because I mean, so you obviously started working with horses, and that involves shoveling a lot of stuff, doesn't it? That involves physically shoveling stuff.
Oh, yeah.
that is your apprenticeship, learning to shovel stuff.
Oh, yes. You learn to work physically hard from very early in the morning, you know, when most people were sleeping, you got up. It was very normal to stand up at 5:30 and then work your first shift before breakfast and then keep on going, right?
So how old were you when you were doing this? What was your age?
I started working at 17. Okay. So I moved out of my parents' house and started like my apprentice with 17 years old. And prior to that, of course, I worked with horses, but the real passion began when I went in deeper. And it's a lot of hard work, right? It's not just like horses, it's beautiful. Yes. And they're, you know, it sounds amazing.
I know the riding is a very small part of the physical yes. work required, because horses need to be obviously, you know, the shit needs to be shoveled out of wherever they're sleeping and all the time. And of course they need to be cleaned and groomed and and fed and everything else. And then the riding is a very small part of it, isn't it?
Yes, it's, you know, I learned a lot of lessons back then from doing redundant work, as you said, like literally shoveling, sorry, my language.
No, shit is fine.
They're shit, yeah, right? Yeah, they're yeah. shit, shoveling yeah. their shit every single day. Like yeah. you learn to do redundant, even the redundant work with yet good quality, high quality, right? Because you can't leave it the shit hanging around, sorry. And yet try to find ways that you can even enjoy doing that. Like, for example, there I would listen to audiobooks while I did my work, or listen to music, or, yeah. you know, you learn to do all of the hardworking things that it's part of it. It's part of the job of then also, yes, being able, of course, to ride horses or to, I would do free work with them. So you would lunge them with your body language around an area for free. So, and then also working with humans, because where I did my apprentice, it was also a lot about giving seminars to people. So we had, you know, weekend seminars where people would come to the workshops and we would lecture them on horses and everything around them. And so it was a very diverse environment. And that was my very first contact with also semi-running, helping to run a business like that, which I had a lot of respect for my boss, teacher, whatever you want to call her. I had massive respect for her, and I really looked up to her. So I learned a lot in those 3 to 4 years that I was there. But
it's quite a difficult business to run those business. I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess a couple of hundred years ago when everyone had horses and horses were very common, like, but nowadays, you know, horses are a very elitist kind of industry. So it must be quite a difficult process thing to run.
Really. Yeah, and that's why I honored her. Like, she was one of the people who was so successfully running her business, her horse facility, that, and not going on materialistic things, but she could drive Porsches. She would go to the driving ranges. Yeah, she was very successful. And that is especially what, like you mentioned it, in the equine space, right? That's not the norm.
No.
So I really admired her. But even while I did The Apprentice, I remember and I really looked up to her, right? And then in the second year, when I went snowboarding, I twisted my knee. And I literally couldn't ride or do all of the fun stuff. I was the one person to, you know, do even more shit shoveling and cleaning stuff because I couldn't ride. And then 1 year later, in the same week, again, snowboarding, I broke my tailbone. And so again, like, I was gone for again, a half a year to 3/4 of a year. So it was there already a lot of growth of, okay, how can we use this time? How can we use this even in this situation to grow?
What I think is fascinating is that the universe took away the one thing that you wanted to do.
It said, yes.
It took away the riding, the joy of what you wanted to do, and gave you the tough bits, and you carried on going through it. So there must have been a passion there somewhere, because obviously passion wasn't for the riding.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's one reason why I probably went as well onto the passion of free longing horses as I did, like that you could literally lead them just with how you are with your body. But it goes beyond the body, right? It's also the energy that you stream out, the authentic, how authentic you are, if they listen or not.
Yeah. I mean, that's the point about this, isn't it, really, in some way? When you're working with horses, it's that you're working with someone which is very unseen. You're working with the energy, your energy, because they pick up everything, don't they? It's like working with dogs are the same, I guess.
100%. Like, for example, I afterwards, of course, teached a lot of people in this area for almost over a decade. And I mean, I would stand in a circle, right? In a circle, and I would have either a very tiny horse, like a Shetland pony, like a pony, right? It was super small, or a 180, like, you know, where you stand next to the horse and you can't even come to the shoulder, like to the back, like where you're just tiny next to it. And you would stand inside, and your goal would be to get that horse moving, right? To have him listen to you. But the horse thought and learned that, no, I'm not respecting people, for example, and they would rear. So you have this either pony rearing at you or this 180 horse, which both in that situation is like even a cow galloping straight at you, you don't feel that good. So, but even then you learned that you had the choice to be afraid in that moment or like be unsure, which if you had that, especially with stallions, like they won't listen, right? Or you have this certainty of saying, you move now, and you know, I'm not budging. And then the horse budgets. It doesn't matter how big or small. But the issue is mostly, like, I had so many stories where the horse owner would be like, yeah, my horse would never listen to that small of a cue. Like, because you could literally, horses are very sensitive, right? And even if they weren't to humans for a very long time, because we're mostly not sensitive, like they would, and I, guys, I know you can't see me on over the podcast, but imagine just me moving my finger like a millimeter or a centimeter up. Horses see that. And if you do the same with your energy, like just tilting your upper body up a bit, and you have that, that's enough that horses would move. They pick up on that, even if they're 4 meters away. So I would have owners, horse owners, continuously tell me, like, now my horse, look, I'm showing you, like, I'm doing it. But the point is, and yes, the horse wouldn't listen because they didn't have that congruity of this certainty behind it of saying, you listen.
It's fascinating, this, because it's the same thing around, like, you know, when you're doing, like, when you're personally doing, like, weight training or something, and you're trying to push a harder weight. And if you don't, if you're not convinced you can do it, there's no way you're going to lift it. But if you are convinced you're going to do it, you get there. And someone can just, and if you're struggling, someone can spot you and they can just put their finger on the bar and you can lift it, even though they're not actually putting any energy into the bar. For some reason, someone spotting you can do this. And it's about belief. It's about totally your belief. And it's exactly the same with horses, because I did a little bit of riding in my early 20s, and I know exactly what you mean. The horses used to take the piss out of me something completely, because they knew there was no way I had any control. Oh, yeah, go on. Yeah, all right, I'll let you ride me, but I ain't taking you where you want to go. So I really understand that. It's fascinating, fascinating. So you were in horses for 10 years, you say?
I focused on first the nonverbal cues. So we actually invented back then horse agility, which, you know, dog agility, right? When you get the dog over diverse obstacles.
Yeah.
We did the same with horses. So without any rope, without any having anything, you would literally have the horse jump over diverse obstacle course, which was super fun back then. And then I wanted to enhance my riding. So I went to the Vienna Riding School. So most riders there and Oberbereiter have private stables. So I went for a full year of training to the Oberbereiter there, and then ran a couple of, not a couple, then I ran my own just bigger stop, horse just, facility. Just,
that sounds like hard to get into that place. Did you have to kind of go through some process to get in?
Well, they wanted to see that. So I went to a private place, right? I didn't go to the like official Vienna, Spanish riding school, of course, because that's a huge process. Yes, that is huge. So I went to a private Oberbereiter, Herr Riegler, he was called, and he trained me then for a year. So it's like a private place that you go to.
So for the sake of the listeners, so understand what that is. Now, I think, isn't this the one where the way the rider rides on the horse and they get the horse to kind of move their foot and they get them to kind of like do all sorts of kind of unusual moves that you wouldn't expect a horse to do?
Yeah, it's so that type of training is kind of equivalent with a ballerina.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, exactly, where you get them to go sideways and then at one point rear in a specific way to get their how they move is a healthy way of moving, because horses weren't designed that humans actually sit on them from their anatomy.
No.
So it's a way that actually horses stay healthy, but it's again this, how do you get another individual with minimal cues that you can't see from the outside, right? They're so slightly.
But what I'm getting at here, the more important I'm getting here, this is not about making a horse go backwards and forwards and turn a corner. This is about making a horse do really unusual things that is not pretty natural in their movements. And you're doing,
you want high performance, like the highest performance, which is such an act of, if you put too much energy, too much pressure, then you fall into stress, right? And that's not what you want. Yeah. So if you do too little energy pressure, then you're not getting the exercise of the Spanish Riding School, which you guys can check out. It's amazing what you could do with horses, but it's the same balance that we try to find as athletes, as humans. Yeah. You have to find the balance between what is too much, what is too little, and then how can you get another, 500 kilogram weighing horse to listen to your most subtlest movements. And be high pressure, but be happy about it. Like, that's that's kind of, you know, it's the same journey that humans go on, which is, I find, again, fascinating.
So you went to to Vienna, and you trained again at a very professional level. What was the objective here? What were you chasing?
So, very honestly, being vulnerable here, I always, and I did this over 10 years, and I came to very high levels. Like, I could ride Grand Prix. I could, you know, even on launching the horses around it with horse agility. But I never felt that I was good enough. And that didn't matter to what I achieved, right? It was literally this inner self-doubt that I always chased. And I always had this fear of not being good enough for my clients, for myself, on where I wanted to be. So my objective was always getting there. That was my drive.
Mm-hmm. That's called imposter syndrome, I think.
Yeah, I had it. I think I was, until I was 30, I had it like very severely. Like, I had it to the point where I switched industries, right? I went then into the software development industries, mm-hmm. completely away from horses, because I couldn't master. Like, I could tell you a lot of reasons why I did it, right? One of the main reasons, I think, underlying it, being very honest, was this feeling of, I never felt good enough. Mm. Even though my clients had huge successes, even though I had huge successes, like, it didn't matter what happened on the outside. It was my inside eating me away, right? And I remember, you know, very specifically, like, I would teach young students, right? And the moment I left my facility, one of them, for example, that I led, the kids came up to me and they handed over a like huge picture book and a book, and, you know, to show their appreciation. And one of them, and many of them, said they would have stopped writing if it wasn't for me. And, you know, it was very moving and heart touching, but that was the first time. And I had a lot of like high strung clients, but that was the first time with these kids that I really felt like I made a difference, right? Because I always swung between, like, why does this matter, right? And that was the very first time that I really felt like I made a difference in somebody else's life, even though so many other people said it before. And I, you know, we had these things, but it's just this internal growth that you're going through that's what had to take place.
You gotta let it in.
Yeah,
you got to let it in. You can't, yeah, you've got to look for the evidence and let it in. And, you know, we all do this. It's very, very common. You're a very common story of people saying, like, you know, like, you know,
it's crazy, right?
It is.
Yeah, it is.
But it's human. It's what we are as humans. It's why we do this thing. That's why we're called humans.
Yeah, you know, but one thing that I continuously think of is like, why? Why is it? And how could I give the tools? Like, I have a daughter right now, right? And so, of course, I know she's going to struggle and she's going to have her obstacles in life. And as parents, you always wonder, what tools can I give them to succeed, to handle these situations better, to not go through the same pain that you went through, right? So this is one of the drives that if I talk about these things and I remember my struggles, it's really on that level, thinking about how could I prepare her to not have 10 years of the same struggles I have. She can have other ones, you know, evolution, right?
Well, that's the point, isn't it? I think there has to be some struggle, because that is the point of being human. If there's no struggle, there's no point to it, to the exercise. So what all we can do for our children is role model being in the struggle, and role model that it's okay to be in the struggle, and role model that you will find your way out of it. Trust that, you know, you're going out of it.
That's the word. That's the word for me. Is, if I could teach her that, we have a saying in my family that baseline, we'll figure it out. Like, before any challenge, before we get into anything, we say baseline, we'll figure it out. Because if you have the confidence, you know, at one point, and you come from the space of, I'll figure it out, That would be my biggest win, as me giving her a tool, because I always came from the fear-based side.
Yeah.
Of when I faced a challenge, and so no matter the challenge, the first like 30 years, I handled challenges from a place of fear. And now I handle challenges from a place of I'll figure it out. And that for me is my whole life changed from that moment on.
That's that inner confidence, isn't it? I think that's the difference. That's growing up. That's that when you get that inner confidence that you can figure it out when you're settled in your own skin as such that I know that I can sort this out.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the question, like, do we have to grow up to receive that certainty? Like, you can build on it, but why do we, like, if you look at three-year-olds, they have the confidence to, you know, stand up, curiously go about finding new things. Like, they have the confidence. So at one point, we as a society, as parents, as individuals, I don't know, we come to the point of, why at one point are they getting uncertain, and why can't we step in at that point and say, hey guys, baseline, we'll figure out, and now let's do it. Like, since I did that switch, my kid, I saw the transformation in her as well. So that's my question.
I suspect it's the size of the challenge.
That's agreed.
You know, because it's like we can all encompass what we can encompass, you know, but if once it starts to get bigger, and gets bigger beyond, because there's always bigger. Yeah, right. So that's what I think it is. It's the size of the challenge. Well, and the resources you have to master the challenge.
Well, I agree, but I always do, that's a belief of mine, of life hands you the challenges that you can handle.
Oh, absolutely. So right? True. Absolutely. Yeah, life happens for you, not to you.
Voila.
So look, okay, we could go down a rabbit hole here because I love these conversations and I need to move us on for brevity. So look, where did you go? You ended up in software development by the sounds of it.
Yes. So what I did shortly before was I had a goal of growing and expanding. So the last horse facility that I had prior to the change, we had like a 500% growth. Like, we came, the stable was empty. And it was a huge facility. It was 55 horses, two riding arenas, two outside places.
That's a lot of shoveling.
That's a lot of shoveling. That's when you started working in teams. And like, how do you motivate people who with the lowest wages,
yes,
with the lowest wages, to give their best,
yes,
in that environment doing redundant work? So it was very interesting place. And then we took it, and within 3 months, 3 to 4 months, we had all boxes filled. Like, we literally went from 10 boxes filled to 55 plus a waiting list. The same with then the writing. And so I loved taking where I tended towards is I loved taking the team. How do we get the team on a level that we perform that high that also the business will go start? And then that led me to meeting someone who was then in the software development space. And it was an awesome team. And it was, they had passion and drive. And he convinced me, you know what? We want to grow and we want you on our boat. And so I said, okay, like, because of diverse life circumstances, you know what? I'm not going to go in deep there. And then I switched to software development for mixed reality, which is at the forefront of like technology. It's similar with artificial intelligence. It's like seeing 3D objects while seeing the world around you. It's just mind-blowing. And we grew the company from 4 to 35 employees within a year.
How long ago was this?
It's 2021 now. So four years.
4 years. Okay. Okay. Because that's quite sophisticated technology. That what you're talking about.
Yeah. That was.
And you know, I mean, that software development in that area is risky. Is risky work in a way because it's so cutting edge.
Yeah, and it's not yet in the mass market, right?
No, it's mainly working with
industries.
Okay, so this is like. So, what's the purpose of this technology? What does it do?
So, it's very wide range, but where it is right now, you mainly prototype situations that, for example, when you can see what you're designing in three dimensions, right? So, everything that, for example, you see. You see on the computer screen, which is 2D.
But
it doesn't have depth, right? You can't imagine it that well. It's like
this is 3D modeling, like.
Yeah, exactly. It's like for me, for example, I also learned horse anatomy and everything. And I don't know if you ever had to learn either horse anatomy or something, a mechanical chop, for example, or anything in that source. It would be so easy for us, for our human brains, to see the whole 3D model in front of you, like a bone or a leg or the engine, right? And then you could turn it around. You could make it bigger and look inside. You could make it smaller and look at the big picture. And that's what it allows you to do. And in the industries nowadays, it lets you allow that you can sort your machine, you know, I mean, those are huge machines, right? You can see them.
Absolutely. I mean, in context though, isn't it? It's like having an artificial, particularly like an aircraft or a spacecraft, you're tight for space. When you can see the three dimensions, how things are going to sit within that space.
Yeah. And especially for communication purposes, I find it interesting that designers have a different language than the mechanics and the electricians, and they all have different maps, right?
Yeah.
It's like when you build a house and every single one of them have kind of like a different worldview and a different set of communication.
Right. So
I'm
laughing because my wife and I have this ongoing struggle with communication and stuff. I'm the practical side that can do anything in a bit of wood, a bit of metal. And she's the visuals. She goes, I want it to do that. And we just end up arguing because we just cannot communicate what something looks like. And I'm going, but so yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Right? Yes, and exactly. And when you have a model that you could like very put in front of everybody and everybody can see on the model, this is how it would look like. Then it's like, oh, okay. I thought you meant it differently, you know?
Yeah.
So it has such big potential.
I'm just because I draw a picture. She goes, well, what's that? And I go, and I go, no, it goes that way. I'm just laughing at the idea of that.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly the point. And if you once have a model that you could both see and both have your designs in the same thing, that's when, you know, communication becomes so much easier. So there's a lot of different prototypes.
So you've worked that. What industries do you primarily work in? Are you still in the software development?
No, now I moved away from that company after the company settled it with 35 employees because I was mainly in charge of growing the teams, growing the leadership teams then, right? Because you had departments at one level.
Yeah.
And building these communication skills, these internals. And once that was settled, again, I kind of had, well, then I actually had one of my bigger breakdowns of my life where I really noticed I'm on my wrong. It's again, we had huge success. The company was multi-millions, right? But I still had this imposter. I still had this deep of it's not good enough. I'm not good enough. I still had it. And it went to the point where then also with the whole life situation, you know, when you don't listen to life and you don't learn the lesson, you know, at one point. So I really had that part where I internally stressed myself to the point where I lost patches of hair.
Okay.
And I remember, I remember, oh my God, I tell you, I was standing in the shower. I look down and just make blup. I still get goosebumps when I think of that situations. And it was really that moment where I said, it's not what I do, but how I do it. And that was the moment where I said, I'm changing my life. But no matter what challenge I go face, I first have to find different tools for myself, different processes, how I handle things to figure out it's not what I do, but how I handle it. It's not how I face it. And that's when really my life started to take off. Of course, not like, you know, it wasn't a yay, yay journey all of the time. It was the roughest patch. It was one of the roughest patches of my life. But coming out of that, it was worth it.
What pulled you through? What was the tool that pulled you through?
The tools were diverse. One of the bigger ones was honestly a book called The Untethered Soul.
Oh, yes. I read that book.
Yeah, it was, I had it on audio, and every time I would, you know, when you get to a place where you want to let it go, you want to let this stress go, but it's just like, it's stuck with you, right?
So for the benefit of my audience, he is a meditator. He literally meditates in the forest, isn't he? That's what he does. And he ends up buying the forest.
Well, the story I heard, it might, honestly, I didn't go big in his biography, honestly. The story that I have of him is that fascinated me back then was he's a meditator, and he looks at life through the lens of how he describes in the book. But then he grew a, I think, $8 million business.
That's right. And then someone in his team basically did something really illegal. And he had the full might of the American tax system and legal system down on his head. And he was facing jail, like serious, long time. Yeah. And it was nothing to do with him. He hadn't done any of it.
Exactly. And that went over 6 years. And that's the time period where he wrote the book.
Yeah.
And it's the same, right? It's the same story of, it's not what you face, which he faced a lot, right?
Yeah.
And it's how you do it. So pulling that through, but listening to it once didn't help me. Because when you're in that moment of when you're fully stuck and you have this pressure, I made the decision, okay, I want to change, but it really feels like I can't, right? It's so habitual over 30 years. But when I listened to his book, his audio in those moments, and really, you know, that way I could change my focus and listen to some areas of the book. And that's where I always could let it go, let the pressure go, decide I want to be open. I want to stay open and be happy and face life with the baseline. I'll figure it out. And that's one of the tools that I used in diverse situations that really made a huge difference in my life.
So you've obviously got through this process. You've came up with, and are you a meditator now? Is that what you do?
I'm an active meditator. Like when you can say it, I hardly take time, honestly, to like sit down and breathe, but I meditate when I am running or when I'm walking or when I'm with my horse. Like I have these rituals that I do that go in that direction.
Hmm. Yeah. So you left this company and you obviously recognized you had to sort yourself out. And then where did you end up? What did you do then, having sorted yourself out?
Yeah, that was a journey of self-discovery. At one point, I got on a phone call with a friend, Olivia, and we had these long discussions. And after a couple of discussions, she was like, you know, why do we do this everything, right? Why? And it was to the same time that I started homeschooling my child, or making the decision to homeschool my child because of various reasons. And we said, you know, the reason being of all the companies that I've did for everything is one, to have freedom, and two, to enjoy, to create memorable moments with my daughter, mm-hmm. and build hers up so she can have a life, right? Build these skills. Like one of the reasons for homeschooling is just so you have more control of what they learn.
Yeah.
And then when we got into homeschooling, we continued these discussions. One of the biggest pain points I noticed was if I would have learned to communicate not just in writing, not just in speaking, but communicate in all of these different ways, my life would have been a lot easier. And it's not just how you communicate with yourself, it's also how do you talk in a way that others listen? How do you talk in a way that's meaningful for others? And that's the point where we notice there's nothing out there in the market like this. And I'm homeschooling my child, and I noticed three things that I wanted that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. One, I wanted to, I love working on real life applications.
Yeah.
Like, right? Because I remember during school time that how many things did you do for your bachelor? You worked months on the papers and then just to put them in the drawer. Like, and nobody uses them. Nobody uses the knowledge, which I find is why. Like, and it seems so meaningless, a lot of the work you do. And mm-hmm. I don't like that. I don't like my spending my time in this redundant work that I find meaningless. Like even shoveling horse shit maneuver out of the box has more meaning than doing some of the exercises just to kind of beat yourself into this things, right? So what we did then was I wanted my child, when we homeschool, to work on projects that directly have real life impact for her. Like she notices it makes a difference.
Yeah.
And it's so amazing, just to give you an example and maybe a short story of how that would be possible of it, is since we started, we had one kid who throughout our project, one project, he in 3 days, he got over $1,000. It's, by the way, a six-year-old, over $1,000 for his charity. Then he got invited to speak at a board meeting for saving sea turtles, which was what was he talked about on his video, right? And then he got an honor of medal from the seacoast where he lived. And that was 6 years old because he did a writing project and a speaking project of stepping up in front of a camera and telling people, guys, you should really give some money for this charity. Like it was super sweet. And what do you think this kid learned, right? That's the stuff that gets remembered, that your parents will talk about, so you remember it continuously as well. And then the second part was I wanted something for my kid where she would work with other kids collaboratively, like not play around, like socialization. Even pre-COVID times, my kid loved playing with the neighborhood kids. So she had play time enough with other kids. I didn't worry about that because my kid is quite outgoing. Like she would make friends in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
But the issue is, how do you work with others? Nobody ever teaches you how to collaboratively work with others, which I notice is such a big thing because, you know, of the teams that I've led and built, this is a cornerstone of mine. So I really wanted her to not just be in groups, but have people guiding her how to then improve and build groups that she can really like. Whereas I am a parent, say, wow, that's a really cool friends group that she's in that encourage the right values that I kind of value as well. And that's exactly what we built with, not to kind of set our own drum, but that's exactly, so, like we built this environment that I want my kid to be in.
So is it a school? Is it a building? Or is it an online presence? How does it work?
No, you can picture it in the way that it's virtual. So okay. They come on like, not on Zoom, but similar. So on a video conf call, and there's only 4 to 6 kids in one group. And it's child led. So of course, depending on the age range, there's some differences. But it's child-led, so the kids get this month-long project that they work through together in a weekly meeting and on one-on-one calls with their partner. So again, they can connect even closer to the other kids and build this genuine connection and friendship and have fun. But at the same time, it's amazing how they teach themselves, for example, to stay focused, to how do you, like we have guides for that, and we cherish that they know how to interrupt, how to face somebody else who's interrupting, how to keep others focused or themselves focused, and or own. And this is a big topic actually we just had about the last week with the kids, which I celebrate. One of the biggest moments I celebrated is when kids own up to their mistakes in front of their groups, and their group members cheer them on because they did. So we had a kid, and this is not the first time that it happened, but we had a kid who was very shy and he did a mistake, and then he owned the mistake. He said it on the call and apologized on the call. And everybody, I get goosebumps, everybody on the other kids, right? They were like, this is so cool that you're owning it. And, you know, and that's the type of environment I want my kids to be in, that these, the virtues, the values that let the kids know, hey, I can own my mistake and now let's figure out a solution together.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's right. That's how you learn to work collaboratively and also lead a team while you grow up.
So you've been in perfect situation in COVID, what was schooling all going virtual. Yeah. You it's been probably very, very useful for you.
Oh my God, I tell you, this is one of the situations where it's like, I don't know how many times I told to my daughter's dad, it's like, I'm so happy that we're homeschooling, because I did a couple of months of virtual schooling where you're kind of in between, you know, yeah. They're at home,
yeah.
But yet you have like the curriculum of the teacher, and that's completely different. That's yeah. For me, it was the most stressful time as a parent.
So look, I need to move us on. I'm loving this conversation, but I will have to move us on. So look, how do you measure success? Because obviously when you were riding horses, there was obvious physical success. But has that changed over time for you?
Yeah, it did. When I was young and starting out, right, I measured success as probably many kids do in that age, of how much money I earn, how much, yeah. You know, what I drive. And even by the horses, like what do you reach? What levels do you reach? But it was very external. And the big lesson that I learned for me, success for me is doing what I love, feeling like having that inner drive and this calmness and happiness that I'm doing exactly what I'm doing, that even if I'm facing challenges, I'm, you know, you start to love the challenges as such. And spending time like building these memorable moments, that's, for me, that's a successful life.
Yeah, brilliant.
That's how it changed. It went from external to internal. It's not what you do, but how you do it. And I think that was my growth journey throughout everything. That's mm-hmm. why I always say it's not everything until now has prepared me for what I'm doing now.
And what would you say is your contribution?
My contribution I'm aiming at is to give the kids tools that they have the confidence to face challenges, that they have this certainty, that they have communication and writing tools, that if they're in a conflict, if that they can handle conflict, that build relationship instead of, you know, separating each other, that they can make themselves understood so others will listen, so they know their voices is heard, so they can reach and impact the world and live that life, like definition success, right? Have that same aha moments in their life where at one point, no matter what they do, they enjoy what they do, and they come from this place of confidence, not this place of fear, because that's going to be where your regrets are. And if you come from this point, that's when you're going to, no matter where you are and with what resources you have, you're going to make the best of it. And then you're going to have those memorable stories that you can then tell later on of having an awesome life.
Absolutely. It's all about stories in the end. It's about being able to experience something and tell the story about it, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what's the one question I haven't asked you that I should have done?
Ooh. That's a good question. It's a very good question. Maybe I love that question. What's a specific tool that I could use, like tactic or principle, that like or exercise for the one listening directly to implement into their daily life right now? Like I'm a very tactics driven person, maybe because I'm in the communication field, because I always say there's a lot of fluff out there, right? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of you should listen more, or, you know, but I'm always like, well, how? Yeah, you should use more melody in your voice, but okay, tell me how exactly. So that's always the question that I kind of go after.
What's the answer?
it highly depends, right, on what topic we're talking about. One, if you're telling a story, an easy framework would be first to tell about a character. It's like a four-step process if you want to tell a good story. One is you have a character who has a goal. So let's say I had to walk a mile to deliver candy to my cousin. And then two is the conflict, where he's like, yeah, but then I looked outside and it was thundering, it was night and it was pouring rain, right? It's the conflict that you encounter. Then the third is the value-based decision that you make in that moment. So you could say, you know, in that moment, I decided I had to choose between fear or family. Like, there's a value-based decision behind it, because that's really what interests us as humans, right? That makes us empathize more. And then the fourth part is the resolution, of course, the lesson of it. So you could say, well, I chose family over fear, and I went out there and I walked that mile and delivered it to my cousin. And what I learned is that nature will always challenge us, but we can look up to nature and say, hey, you're awesome, but I am even more awesome. You know, it's kind of...
That's the hero's journey, isn't it?
Ta-da! So there's a four-step framework. I learned this from Jason Capital. Mm-hmm. So that's if you want to tell a story, here's a very short framework to do
that. And that's the hero's journey. That is the opposite. It is that process, isn't it? And I think that's what we're on. I think we're all on our own hero's journey.
We all should write our stories in a way that we are the heroes of our stories.
Yeah.
Although I honestly see myself more as a guide now to all the heroes that I am.
Oh, I don't know. I think I see you as the hero personally, but there we are. So what is it that you do? Because I mean, I understand sort of what you do, and you've alluded to it, but it's quite hard to get my head around it. I mean, obviously you've created this business, which is about story and about education of children.
Yes. So are you asking what position I play in, or what the Story Weaver exactly does?
No, what the business is. What is it that what is your project now? This is your opportunity to tell us about your project
and who
you're looking for to come and get involved with.
So if you're a homeschooler, and it could be for gifted children, from ADHD children, from dyslexic children, from, you know, very wide range of children. And you want your kids to collaboratively work with other kids in small groups while enhancing their writing and communication skills, then you should look up, if I may, www.thestoryweavers.com. So thestory-weavers.com. And there is a lot of sample work and exactly what we do. But the main point is that we promise is you guys can have an amazing community of small collaborative work that your kid really learns how to work together and lead other themselves and other kids.
Is that done like country specific? Do you bring together people from one particular country, or is that international?
So it's international. The kids who we do, of course, kind of look for the time zones depending on when you have time during the day. So if you're very particular, but my child's group, for example, they have Switzerland, Germany, Canada, and USA inside. We have kids from Australia, from the UK. So you meet children from such diverse backgrounds, which is, we celebrate it in our groups, right?
That's lovely. That's really nice when you have that sort of thing going on, because obviously, that's the wonder of modern technology, that we can communicate all over the world, and bringing kids together at that level must be amazing.
100%. And you know, I always say that, I find that amazing. And that's one reason why I homeschool my kid now, is because she has the resources of having the most passionate teachers, because we could choose anywhere in the world, right? Mm. So the same is with kids. She can interact with kids around the world, and they see, like, they always say, we can't wait until COVID ends so we finally can travel and meet each other live and do, like, you know, this is so, so cool. And we really can't wait for it. And then you notice that, yes, we're international and we live in all these different places, but we're all striving for the same. We're all striving, you know, they really notice and grow with themselves with this group. So that's the beauty of it.
So say the link again. What other ways of communicating with you?
So either over the website, which is www.thestory-weavers.com, or over our Facebook. I mean, you could find me, Geraldine Schmidt, or we have a Facebook group called Read, Write, Lead, where anybody can join and have fun conversations, and there's games in it and resources.
Okay.
So those are the ways you can communicate with me.
All those links will be on the show notes above, and they will also be at the website Life, Passion and Business. So we have to pick it up from there.
Awesome. Guys, you're awesome.
So thank you, Geraldine. So look, the last question I have for all my guests, which is the big question, the big human question. What is the meaning of life for you?
The meaning for life for me right now at the stage I am in is that we grow spiritually. It's hard to define, right, what spiritually means, but that the who we are, that awareness, that we grow that awareness to handle different challenges and then live for those memorable moments and make the most out of it. So that is, for me, this inner growth is everything happens for that reasons.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Geraldine Smith, for sharing your stuff with us today. It's been an amazing journey today. I've really enjoyed the conversation. And I love the stuff about horses. It's just amazing. So thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you so much. So interesting questions.
Thank you. All the best. And that was Life, Passion and Business with Paul Harvey and my guest, Geraldine Schmidt. If you would like to connect with Geraldine, do check out her website. You can find it at thestory-weavers.com. You can find her on Facebook under a group called Homeschool Writing Secular. You can also find her on Instagram, thestory_weavers. All of those links will be available at the website Life, Passion and Business under Geraldine's podcast. I mentioned a book on this podcast, and it is a good point to remind you that we have a book resource on the website. These are the 20 books that I have found useful over the last 20 odd years, I guess. And The Untethered Soul is one of them. So do check out that list. And while you're there, you could check out the Sunday reflection, which was called The Gap Between Learning and Doing. It's about that thing about why we keep buying into more courses and things to learn stuff instead of getting things done, and some resources in there for you. Anyway, finally, as I say every week, do remember to support your content creators. If you've enjoyed this podcast, and you enjoy any podcast, do like, share and follow, and all the better still, review podcasts, because that helps us, but it also helps people like yourself find a good podcast. So please, if you can and you find the time, create a review. It would be appreciated. So that's it from me for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for your time and attention, and I will catch you later. All the best.